Hello. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. My name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from the Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. And today we're starting with a story from Higher Education, published on November 6th by Sarah Nagem. A Genius Among Us. Nabarun Dasgupta, a senior scientist at UNC Chapel Hill and expert on fatal drug overdoses, was awarded a 2025 MacArthur Fellowship. The so-called Genius Grant comes with an $800,000 prize. Nabarun Dasgupta spends many afternoons walking through the 200-year-old cemetery across the street from his Raleigh home. Strolling among the gravestones, he thinks about how death is merely part of the process of living, a bookend of a short-term existence. As an epidemiologist at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, who studies street drugs, Dasgupta is used to hearing from colleagues and friends about fatal overdoses. The deaths are not just statistics to Dasgupta. They're personal. He's been to a lot of funerals. When you're surrounded by death, it's easy to get burnt out, he said. It's easy to lose sight of what it takes to get up in the morning. Dasgupta, 46, has a new reason to be energized by his work. Last month, he was named a 2025 MacArthur Fellow, a prestigious achievement that comes with an $800,000 Genius Grant. The 22 recipients from around the world this year were chosen for their creativity and ability to expand their work. Dasgupta is widely considered a leading expert in reducing opioid deaths, particularly through harm reduction efforts like distributing naloxone, a drug that can reverse the effects of an overdose, clean syringes, and fentanyl test strips. 2 years ago, he was named to the Time 100 Next list of rising leaders. Dasgupta started Project Lazarus in Wilkes County in 2007, when he was still working towards a doctoral degree in pharmacoepidemiology at UNC Chapel Hill. The nonprofit distributed naloxone before such measures gained popularity. 5 years later, he co-founded Remedy Alliance, which negotiates with pharmaceutical companies to buy and distribute large supplies of naloxone. Dasgupta now leads the UNC Street Drug Analysis Lab, which analyzes samples from across the country and publishes the results online. By knowing what's in the local drug supply, which can include cocaine, fentanyl, methamphetamines, and xyloxine, communities and public health officials can better understand how to reduce deaths, Dasgupta explained. He also partners with health agencies and harm reduction programs across North Carolina and beyond to better understand what's happening in communities. The combination of real-time data and real-world relationships gives Dasgupta a unique, often heartbreaking look at the opioid crisis that has killed more than 1 million people in the United States since 2000. So, he takes a walk in the cemetery. But he never stays long. There's always more work to do, he says, work he hopes can save lives. Grief and joy. Dasgupta was racked with grief after the death of his friend Louise Vincent in late August. Vincent, who lived in Greensboro and struggled with addiction throughout much of her life, was a fierce advocate of harm reduction efforts. Vincent's work earned her an obituary in the New York Times, which said she overcame multiple heroin overdoses over the years. She founded the North Carolina Survivors Union in 2013, which was the same year she had her leg amputated after being struck by a car, and graduated with a master's degree in public health. A critic of abstinence-based drug treatment programs, Vincent said it was crucial to support people when they have relapses. It's like, "Hi, my name is Louise. I can't stop using drugs, so I need your program," she told the News and Record in 2021, according to the Times. "Oh, you're going to kick me out because I can't stop using drugs? Funny, I just told you that was my problem." Daz Gupta and his wife, Roxanne Saucier, who also works in public health, had grown close with Vincent. He said her death at age 49 from a blood disorder and chronic health problems was likely linked to her past use of xylazine, a powerful sedative used in veterinary care. Vincent was instrumental in the start-up of the UNC Street Drug Analysis Lab. The Survivors Union had gotten donated equipment to test drug samples, but she and her staff didn't know how to use it. So she called Daz Gupta, who sent a graduate student to help. Inspired by the work, Daz Gupta's team at UNC Chapel Hill also got a drug testing machine, and then a bigger, more accurate one. Daz Gupta said it was an emotional day when he told his staff about Vincent's death. "We were all pretty upset. I walked back into my office on campus and turned off the lights and was just going to sit with the pain for a bit." Then Daz Gupta's phone lit up with a call from a Chicago area code. He figured the city's health department was calling about a contract for drug testing. But it was someone from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation telling him he had been selected. The process is highly secretive. Daz Gupta didn't even know he was in the running. Clearly, the expectation was unrestrained joy, and all I could do was think of Louise, he said. It was so super intense. It felt like Louise's parting gift and her encouragement to keep going. I found my calling. After growing up in Maine, Daz Gupta studied molecular biology at Princeton University. He found chronic viral infections like HIV and hepatitis, which are linked to intravenous drug use, fascinating. Daz Gupta then headed to Yale for a master's degree in epidemiology and considered going to Thailand and Cambodia to study dengue, a viral infection spread by mosquitoes. Then, after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks and the anthrax incidents that killed five people in subsequent weeks, he instead planned to take an internship focused on bioterrorism preparedness. He didn't take that job either, opting to return to Maine to study the powerful painkiller OxyContin, which was later blamed for fueling the opioid epidemic. I ended up doing the fieldwork and doing a lot of interviews that summer in Portland, really learning about what drug use was actually like, Daz Gupta said. I guess that was it. I found my calling. In Chapel Hill, Daz Gupta is an innovation fellow at the UNC Gillings School of Global Public Health and a senior scientist at the UNC Injury Prevention Research Center. He specializes in turning research into practice, and through his work, he amplifies community and patient voices in public health and provides innovative health tech and community-based solutions, Dr. Nancy Messonnier, Dean of Gillings School, said in an announcement of the MacArthur. Over the last few years, his drug lab has analyzed about 16,000 samples from 40 states. Daz Gupta said his team has detected more than 450 unique substances, everything from caffeine to synthetic opioids like fentanyl and nitazenes. Daz Gupta's crew packages collection kits that include a small vial, a pencil, and a card to fill out information about where the drugs came from, which are then shipped to health departments, harm reduction programs, and other partners. After UNC Chapel Hill tests the samples, anonymized results are immediately posted online, providing a real-time glimpse of what is in the drug supply. Most street drugs in the United States contain a mixture of substances, Daz Gupta said, which can lead to deadly consequences. UNC Chapel Hill freshman Elizabeth Grace Burton died on the Duke University campus in 2023 after using cocaine that was later determined to contain fentanyl. Sampling can also help explain sudden changes in drug users' experiences. when a Pittsburgh group reported that fentanyl users were having certain types of hallucinations not typically associated with opioids, Dasgupta said his lab identified medetomidine in a sample, a powerful veterinary tranquilizer. In western North Carolina's Madison County, health advocates suspected the local supply of methamphetamines had become more potent after police arrested some suppliers. So they sent the older and newer samples to the lab to compare. They were right. Then they were able to do some on-the-ground sleuthing and realized that there was an influx of a new supply of the shitty tail end of the distribution chain from Atlanta, Dasgupta said. Erin Tracy, a research chemist and the North Carolina State University graduate, conducts much of the drug testing in the UNC Chapel Hill lab. She met Dasgupta during the pandemic when she was considering her next career move after a decade as a drug analyst at government crime labs in Georgia and Wake County. Now she appreciates the positive impact of her work. "The science is the same that I was doing in the crime lab," Tracy said, "but it was used to penalize people within the criminal justice system rather than within the sphere of public health to help empower people." Drop in overdoses. Dasgupta knew something had changed in the drug market when he began to receive fewer late-night phone calls about fatal overdoses. The number of people who died of drug overdoses in North Carolina had climbed in the early 2010s to a peak of 4,422 people in 2023, according to the State Department of Health and Human Services. But the state saw a staggering 32% drop in 2024. The trend matched what other states were also starting to see. Dasgupta cautions against the assumption that opioid drug use has become less common. He believes many opioid users have simply gotten better at avoiding an overdose. Like other health experts, Dasgupta says naloxone and increased treatment options are keeping more people alive, and there are signs that less fentanyl is making its way into the United States, making opioids less potent. "Generational shifts are also at play," he said. "Generation Z, those born between the late 90s and early 2010s, are not as interested in opioids, likely because they saw the devastation in their parents' and grandparents' generations. They have their lived experience," Dasgupta said, "and what they've learned is so much more powerful than any educational message is ever going to be." But testing is still crucial, he says, especially as the drug supply remains unpredictable. Machines that quickly analyze street drugs have become more commonplace at places like music festivals. Dasgupta wants more harm reduction programs and public health agencies to have access to drug testing equipment. He hopes to receive a grant from the Foundation for Opioid Response Efforts early next year that will allow his lab to train others throughout the country. He is considering using the money from the MacArthur grant to study the drug supply from a hemispheric perspective while advocating for harm reduction in Latin America. He also wants to write a book about the 300-year history of drug use in the United States. His genius status comes with some perks. When UNC Chapel Hill Chancellor Lee Roberts called Dasgupta to congratulate him, he asked if there was anything he could do to support him. At the urging of Dasgupta's 12-year-old son, he asked for coveted tickets to the UNC basketball game against Duke. "So he said he'd invite us," Dasgupta said. "It was a fun, jokey conversation. Like, all it takes to get Duke Carolina tickets is to win the MacArthur. So now we know." Well, that was an uplifting story. And now, a change of pace, we're going to look at some history. The most elite real estate in Winston-Salem is for the dead. This is an article by Tina Vasquez from October the 31st. "Don't hit your head on the meat hooks," our guide warns as she leads us by lantern through the uneven cobblestone streets of Old Salem. We entered the historic market house. Originally built as a vending place for fresh meat, the small building has been transformed for the night into the Corpse House. Back in 1850, Salem Square included an actual structure that stored the recently deceased, just a short walk from the area's two noteworthy local cemeteries. Inside, we hear the story of Louisa, a young Moravian woman from the 1800s, who died a year after giving birth, followed quickly by her baby. But the pair did not end up buried with their fellow Protestants in the Moravian cemetery, God's Acre, made up of rows of meticulous, identical white grave markers. Instead, they were interred at Salem Cemetery, the neighbouring burial ground full of elaborate vault houses and ornate monuments. The cemetery is a minor, though recurring, character in Winston-Salem's Night Watchman tours, a limited series of ghost tours full of eerie and sometimes ghastly tales. All are taken directly from historic accounts of Old Salem. It's really more of a spooky history tour about early Moravian life, led by college-aged guides dressed in period garb. At one point during an October 17th tour, our young guide pointed to the John Vogler House on Main Street. When completed in 1819, the large two-story brick home deviated significantly from the area's typical Germanic architecture. While the Voglers were tradesmen, theirs was the bougiest house in Old Salem, our guide explained. The Voglers were also one of the most prominent families in what was then known as Salem, and generations of the family are buried in Salem Cemetery. John Vogler's son, Elias, was the Salem Cemetery Company's president at its founding in 1857. The cemetery became the final resting place for many of Winston-Salem's historic or otherwise affluent figures, including knitwear baron John Wesley Haynes and tobacco titan R.J. Reynolds. Notwithstanding the stately vault houses built into the hillside at the bottom of the cemetery that are stamped with Clemens and other prominent local names, the Reynolds family plot is the most impressive. Classical white columns, the height of a house, mark the final resting place of more than a dozen family members, and behind them, a perfect view of the city skyline. It's an impressive and expensive piece of real estate. While it's technically still possible for an average Joe to be buried here alongside renowned figures who transformed the region, it's unlikely, said Michelle McCullough, the Historic Resources Officer for Winston-Salem Forsyth County Planning and Development Services. If you were wealthy, Salem Cemetery was the place to be buried, explained McCullough. Once the icons of the industrial world were buried there, other rich and famous people bought up plots for their families. People are still buried at the cemetery all of the time, she said. They are most likely the descendants of prominent families still living in our community. While its past is well known, current information about the privately owned and operated cemetery is hard to come by, adding to its mystique. It doesn't have a website, and there's little public information about the cemetery's operations, available burial space, and ownership. While Salem Cemetery supervisor Ryan Sidnor says it's a misconception that the cemetery isn't for your average person, he allows that the lack of information is by design. There's a lot of hesitation about attracting too much attention, said Sidnor, who was also difficult to find. It required the help of Old Salem Museums and Gardens. We've had a lot of problems with people coming here and acting disrespectful. It cites a wish to die. Sidnor isn't the kind of guy you picture overseeing a 168-year-old cemetery. When we met on an unseasonably warm day earlier this month, he emerged from his tiny cinder block office on Cemetery Street, prepared to walk the grounds, his long hair pulled into a low hanging bun, sweater sleeves pushed up and sunglasses firmly planted on his surprisingly young face. Sidnor, 31, runs day-to-day operations of one of Winston-Salem's most historic landmarks. His only employees are three maintenance workers who make daily rounds on riding lawnmowers to keep up the exacting standards of the cemetery's board. The men are also responsible for hand-digging graves. Most cemeteries use a backhoe, but Salem Cemetery's compact plots and unusual location at the bottom of a ravine make hand-digging a necessity. Sidnor says he feels at home among the marble obelisks, granite angels and weather-worn crosses that rise among the cemetery's century-old oaks and magnolias. But he understands why his family and friends were surprised when he took the job 5 years ago. "This job definitely isn't for everyone," Sidnor said, "but I'm a pretty spiritual guy and I don't really have a problem with death. If anything, this place is really beautiful. It's very peaceful. I love it more and more the longer I'm here." It's a stunning property, 17 acres of rolling hillsides, mature trees and perfectly manicured grounds. It's also home to red-tailed hawks, deer, skunks, foxes and other wildlife. For many, cemeteries are haunting, mournful places, but Salem Cemetery's picturesque landscape lends a different feeling. Sidnor calls it the Central Park of Winston-Salem. Designed in the style of the rural cemetery movement that emerged in the 19th century, Salem Cemetery and other burial grounds like it marked a change in how Americans viewed death. In 1835, British writer and abolitionist Fanny Kemble described the sprawling, beautiful grounds of a new American cemetery as a pleasure garden instead of a place for graves that almost excites a wish to die. For those who don't spend their free time walking in cemeteries, McCullough, who does, reiterated that feeling about Salem Cemetery. "I think it's one of our most beautiful cemeteries and it's a little underappreciated," she said. "It's definitely not a place where you go and feel creeped out." "It's also not just a cemetery," she points out. "The history there is mind-blowing. The reason Winston-Salem is a city today is because of the people buried there." While the public is welcome to walk the grounds, shenanigans have caused its very private board to be wary of attention. Sidnor said that in the 1980s, a group of teenagers rampaged through the cemetery, pushing over historic monuments and causing millions of dollars in damage. As more recent examples, Sidnor said he once caught a rap group sipping liquor at the Reynolds family plot while trying to film a music video. A couple of years ago on Halloween, a man dressed as Beetlejuice had to be asked multiple times to leave the cemetery. "One of my guys kept telling him, 'You can't be in here dressed like that. It's disrespectful.' The guy kept saying, 'What do you mean? I'm not wearing a costume,'" Sidnor said. "You can't make this crap up." But still, Sidnor understands the value of conveying at least some information to the public. During recent meetings with the cemetery's 10-member board, Sidnor has discussed building a website that features background on the cemetery, pictures of the grounds, and an overview of what's available for sale, though admittedly, it isn't much. A third of Salem Cemetery is vacant, but a majority of those plots are already sold to local families. For those leaning toward cremation, and a majority are these days, there's a sizable amount of space available for interring ashes in the columbarium. Future generations. John M. Vogler Jr., an indirect descendant of the family with the Bougies housed in Old Salem, is one of the lucky few with a family plot in Salem Cemetery. He is also the sixth generation owner of Salem Funerals and Cremations. His family has provided death care to the region since 1858. Originally Frank Vogler and Sons, Vogler's grandfather sold the business and its name in the 1990s, though Vogler's father, Mosby, remained president. Mosby broke away to launch Salem Funerals and Cremations in 2006, operating out of the company's historic Main Street Chapel. Growing up, John Vogler said he had no real intentions of joining the family business, but in 2010 he moved back from Colorado and joined the company. Now 42, he says overseeing the business as manager and funeral director has been a humbling experience. We often hear stories about an 80-year-old person running through the funeral home when they were a young child here with their parents for a visitation, Fogler said. You do get to know the community in a very different way, and I'm grateful that we can provide comfort not just through the services we offer, but because we're steady. We're a place that generations of families have learned they can rely on during their hardest time. He's overseen dozens of burials at the Salem Cemetery, where another historic Vogler, Elias Alexander, better known as E.A., wrote the cemetery bylaws. Few in Winston-Salem can claim the Moravian roots that Vogler can. The first Moravian settlers arrived in North Carolina in 1753. Over the next dozen years, Moravians established communities throughout what is now Forsyth County. Vogler's family can trace its history to Winston-Salem's first Moravian settlers, so it might surprise some to learn that his family's plot is in the Salem Cemetery, not in God's Acre, where members of the Moravian Church are still buried, according to a choir system in which men, women and children are buried separately and chronologically. It's in a unique geographic location, Vogler said of his family's plot in Salem Cemetery. It basically borders the Moravian graveyard, which is obviously very special for our family. The vantage point means you can see the traditional Moravian Easter sunrise service from there. So I sort of think of it as the best of both worlds. When Vogler started with the family business, his dad often explained the location of a burial by its relation to the monuments of noteworthy families. Because of the business, we have always had these long-standing relationships with some of the older established families in the area. We're almost sort of obligated to understand their history because it's wrapped up in our own. It's a pretty unique thing, Vogler said. It's rare to see the depth and breadth of a city's history reflected in a single place, and Winston-Salem residents have that in the Salem Cemetery. While many historically significant families still have strong ties to the region, one in particular maintains an important bond to the cemetery. The Reynolds family set up a trust for Salem Cemetery, Sidnor said. The investment is about making sure this really beautiful place survives and making sure it's preserved for future generations. Salem Cemetery is a lovely place to visit, even if you can't stay forever. Well, once again, we've run out of time for today's episode of The Assembly. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.